This is Audible.
Macmillan Audio presents Words of Radiance, Book 2 of the Stormlight Archive, by Brandon Sanderson, read for you by Michael Kramer and Kate Redding.
Prologue. To question. 6 years ago. Yasna Kolin pretended to enjoy the party, giving no indication that she intended to have one of the guests killed. She wandered through the crowded feast hall, listening as wine-greased tongues and dimmed minds. Her uncle Dalinar was in the full swing of it, rising from the high table to shout for the Parshendi to bring out their drummers. Yasna's brother, Elokar, hurried to shush their uncle, though the Alethi politely ignored Dalinar's outburst, all save Elokar's wife, Aesudan, who snickered primly behind a handkerchief. Yasna turned away from the high table and continued through the room. She had an appointment with an assassin, and she was all too glad to be leaving the stuffy room, which stank of too many perfumes mingling. A quartet of women played flutes on a raised platform across from the lively hearth, but the music had long since grown tedious. Unlike Dalinar, Yasna drew stares. Like flies to rotten meat, those eyes were, constantly following her. Whispers like buzzing wings. If there was one thing the Alethi court enjoyed more than wine, it was gossip. Everyone expected Dalinar to lose himself to wine during a feast, but the king's daughter admitting to heresy? That was unprecedented. Yasna had spoken of her feelings for precisely that reason. She passed the Parshendi delegation, which clustered near the high table, talking in their rhythmic language. Though this celebration honored them and the treaty they'd signed with Yasna's father, they didn't look festive or even happy. They looked nervous. Of course they weren't human, and the way they reacted was sometimes odd. Yasna wanted to speak with them, but her appointment would not wait. She'd intentionally scheduled the meeting for the middle of the feast, as so many would be distracted and drunken. Yasna headed toward the doors, but then stopped in place. Her shadow was pointing in the wrong direction. The stuffy, shuffling, chattering room seemed to grow distant. High Prince Sadius walked right through the shadow, which quite distinctly pointed toward the sphere lamp on the wall nearby. Engaged in conversation with his companion, Sadius didn't notice. Yasna stared at that shadow, skin growing clammy, stomach clenched, the way she felt when she was about to vomit. Not again. She searched for another light source. A reason. Could she find a reason? No. The shadow languidly melted back toward her, oozing to her feet, and then stretching out the other way. Her tension eased, but had anyone else seen? Blessedly, as she searched the room, she didn't find any aghast stares. People's attention had been drawn by the Parshendi drummers, who were clattering through the doorway to set up. Yasna frowned as she noticed a non-Parshendi servant in loose white clothing helping them. A Shin man? That was unusual. Yasna composed herself. What did these episodes of hers mean? Superstitious folktales she'd read said that misbehaving shadows meant you were cursed. She usually dismissed such things as nonsense. But some superstitions were rooted in fact. Her other experiences proved that. She would need to investigate further. The calm, scholarly thoughts felt like a lie compared to the truth of her cold, clammy skin and the sweat trickling down the back of her neck. but it was important to be rational at all times, not just when calm. She forced herself out through the doors, leaving the muggy room for the quiet hallway. She'd chosen the back exit, commonly used by servants. It was the most direct route, after all. Here, master servants, dressed in black and white, moved on errands from their bright lords or ladies. She had expected that, but had not anticipated the sight of her father standing just ahead, in quiet conference with Bright Lord Meridas Amaram. What was the king doing out here? Gavilar Kolin was shorter than Amaram, yet the latter stooped shallowly in the king's company. That was common around Gavilar, who would speak with such quiet intensity that you wanted to lean in and listen, to catch every word and implication. He was a handsome man, unlike his brother, with a beard that outlined his strong jaw rather than covering it. He had a personal magnetism and intensity that Jasnah felt no biographer had yet managed to convey. Tirim, captain of the king's guard, loomed behind them. He wore Gavilar's shard plate. The king himself had stopped wearing it of late, preferring to entrust it to Tirim, who was known as one of the world's great duelists. Instead, Gavilar wore robes of a majestic classical style. Jasnah glanced back at the feast hall. When had her father slipped out? Sloppy, she accused herself. You should have checked to see if he was still there before leaving. Ahead, he rested his hand on Amaram's shoulder and raised a finger, speaking harshly but quietly, the words indistinct to Jasnah. Father? She asked. He glanced at her.
Ah, Jasnah. Retiring so early?
It's hardly early, Jasnah said, gliding forward. It seemed obvious to her that Gavilar and Amaram had ducked out to find privacy for their discussion. This is the tiresome part of the feast, where the conversation grows louder but no smarter, and the company drunken.
Many people consider that sort of thing enjoyable.
Many people, unfortunately, are idiots. Her father smiled.
Is it terribly difficult for you?
He asked softly.
Living with the rest of us? Suffering our average wits and simple thoughts? Is it lonely to be so singular in your brilliance, Jasnah?
She took it as the rebuke it was, and found herself blushing. Even her mother Navani could not do that to her.
Perhaps if you found pleasant associations, Gavilar said, you would enjoy the feasts.
His eyes swung toward Amaram, whom he'd long fancied as a potential match for her. It would never happen. Amaram met her eyes, then murmured words of parting to her father and hastened away down the corridor. What errand did you give him? Jasnah asked. What are you about this night, father?
The treaty, of course.
The treaty? Why did he care so much about it? Others had counseled that he either ignore the Parshendi or conquer them. Gavilar insisted upon an accommodation.
I should return to the celebration,
Gavilar said, motioning to Tirim. The two moved along the hallway toward the doors Jasnah had left. Father, Jasnah said, what is it you aren't telling me? He glanced back at her, lingering, pale green eyes, evidence of his good birth. When had he become so discerning? Storms. She felt as if she hardly knew this man any longer. Such a striking transformation in such a short time. From the way he inspected her, it almost seemed that he didn't trust her. Did he know about her meeting with Liss? He turned away without saying more and pushed back into the party, his guard following. What is going on in this palace? Jasnah thought. She took a deep breath. She would have to prod further. Hopefully he hadn't discovered her meetings with assassins. But if he had, she would work with that knowledge. Surely he would see that someone needed to keep watch on the family, as he grew increasingly consumed by his fascination with the Parshendi. Yasna turned and continued on her way, passing a master servant, who bowed. After walking a short time in the corridors, Yasna noticed her shadow behaving oddly again. She sighed in annoyance as it pulled toward the three stormlight lamps on the walls. Fortunately, she'd passed from the populated area, and no servants were here to see.
"All right," she snapped. "That's enough."
She hadn't meant to speak out loud. However, as the words slipped out, several distant shadows, originating in an intersection up ahead, stirred to life. Her breath caught. Those shadows lengthened, deepened, figures formed from them, growing, standing, rising. "Stormfather, I'm going insane." One took the shape of a man of midnight blackness, though he had a certain reflective cast, as if he were made of oil. No, of some other liquid with a coating of oil floating on the outside, giving him a dark, prismatic quality. He strode toward her and unsheathed a sword. Logic, cold and resolute, guided Yasna. Shouting would not bring help quickly enough, and the inky litheness of this creature bespoke a speed certain to exceed her own. She stood her ground and met the thing's glare, causing it to hesitate. Behind it, a small clutch of other creatures had materialized from the darkness. She had sensed those eyes upon her during the previous months. By now, the entire hallway had darkened, as if it had been submerged, and was slowly sinking into lightless depths. Heart racing, breath quickening, Yasna raised her hand to the granite wall beside her, seeking to touch something solid. Her fingers sank into the stone a fraction, as if the wall had become mud. Oh, storms! She had to do something. What? What could she possibly do? The figure before her glanced at the wall. The wall lamp nearest Yasna went dark. And then? Then the palace disintegrated. The entire building shattered into thousands upon thousands of small glass spheres, like beads. Yasna screamed as she fell backward through a dark sky. She was no longer in the palace. She was somewhere else. Another land, another time, another something. She was left with the sight of the dark, lustrous figure hovering in the air above, seeming satisfied as he resheathed his sword. Yasna crashed into something, an ocean of the glass beads. Countless others rained around her, clicking like hailstones into the strange sea. She had never seen this place. She could not explain what had happened or what it meant. She thrashed as she sank into what seemed an impossibility. Beads of glass on all sides. She couldn't see anything beyond them, only felt herself descending through this churning, suffocating, clattering mass. She was going to die, leaving work unfinished, leaving her family unprotected. She would never know the answers.
No!
Yasna flailed in the darkness, beads rolling across her skin, getting into her clothing, working their way into her nose as she tried to swim. It was no use. She had no buoyancy in this mess. She raised a hand before her mouth and tried to make a pocket of air to use for breathing, and managed to gasp in a small breath. But the beads rolled around her hand, forcing between her fingers. She sank, more slowly now, as though a viscous liquid. Each bead that touched her gave a faint impression of something. A door, a table, a shoe. The beads found their way into her mouth. They seemed to move on their own. They would choke her, destroy her. No, no, it was just because they seemed attracted to her. An impression came to her, not as a distinct thought, but a feeling. They wanted something from her. She snatched a bead in her hand. It gave her an impression of a cup. She gave something to it. The other beads near her pulled together, connecting, sticking like rocks sealed by mortar. In a moment she was falling, not among individual beads, but through large masses of them stuck together into the shape of a cup. Each bead was a pattern, a guide for the others. She released the one she held, and the beads around her broke apart. She floundered, searching desperately as her air ran out. She needed something she could use, something that would help, some way to survive. Desperate, she swept her arms wide to touch as many beads as she could. A silver platter, a coat, a statue, a lantern. And then, something ancient. Something ponderous and slow of thought, yet somehow strong. The palace itself. Frantic, Jasnah seized this sphere and forced her power into it. Her mind blurring, she gave this bead everything she had, and then commanded it to rise. Beads shifted. A great crashing sounded as beads met one another, clicking, cracking, rattling. It was almost like the sound of a wave breaking on rocks. Jasnah surged up from the depths, something solid moving beneath her, obeying her command. Beads battered her head, shoulders, arms, until finally she exploded from the surface of the sea of glass, hurling a spray of beads into a dark sky. She knelt on a platform of glass, made up of small beads locked together. She held her hand to the side, uplifted, clutching the sphere that was the guide. Others rolled around her, forming into the shape of a hallway with lanterns on the walls, an intersection ahead. It didn't look right, of course, the entire thing was made of beads, but it was a fair approximation. She wasn't strong enough to form the entire palace. She created only this hallway, without even a roof. But the floor supported her, kept her from sinking. She opened her mouth with a groan, beads falling out to clack against the floor. Then she coughed, drawing in sweet breaths, sweat trickling down the sides of her face and collecting on her chin. Ahead of her, the dark figure stepped up onto the platform. He again slid his sword from his sheath. Jasnah held up a second bead, the statue she'd sensed earlier. She gave it power, and other beads collected before her, taking the shape of one of the statues that lined the front of the feast hall. The statue of Talan Elat Ilin, herald of war, a tall, muscular man with a large shard blade. It was not alive, but she made it move, lowering its sword of beads. She doubted it could fight. Round beads could not form a sharp sword. Yet the threat made the dark figure hesitate. Gritting her teeth, Jasnah heaved herself to her feet, beads streaming from her clothing. She would not kneel before this thing, whatever it was. She stepped up beside the bead statue, noting for the first time the strange clouds overhead. They seemed to form a narrow ribbon of highway, straight and long, pointing toward the horizon. She met the oil figure's gaze. It regarded her for a moment, then raised two fingers to its forehead and bowed, as if in respect. A cloak flourishing out behind. Others had gathered beyond it and they turned to each other, exchanging hushed whispers. The place of beads faded, and Jasnah found herself back in the hallway of the palace. The real one, with real stone. Though it had gone dark, the stormlight dead in the lamps on the walls. The only illumination came from far down the corridor. She pressed back against the wall, breathing deeply. I, she thought, need to write this experience down. She would do so, then analyze and consider. Later. Now she wanted to be away from this place. She hurried away, with no concern for her direction, trying to escape those eyes she still felt watching. It didn't work. Eventually she composed herself and wiped the sweat from her face with a handkerchief. Shades, Mar, she thought. That is what it is called in the nursery tales. Shadesmar, the mythological kingdom of the Spren. Mythology she'd never believed. Surely she could find something if she searched the histories well enough. Nearly everything that had happened before. The grand lesson of history and... storms. Her appointment. Cursing to herself, she hurried on her way. That experience continued to distract her, but she needed to make her meeting. So she continued down two floors, getting farther from the sounds of the thrumming Parshendi drums, until she could hear only the sharpest cracks of their beats. That music's complexity had always surprised her, suggesting that the Parshendi were not the uncultured savages many took them for. This far away, the music sounded disturbingly like the beads from the dark place, rattling against one another. She'd intentionally chosen this out-of-the-way section of the palace for her meeting with Lys. Nobody ever visited this set of guest rooms. A man that Jasnah didn't know lounged here, outside the proper door. That relieved her. The man would be Lys's new servant, and his presence meant Lys hadn't left, despite Jasnah's tardiness. Composing herself, she nodded to the guard, a Vaden brute with red speckling his beard, and pushed into the room. Lys stood from the table inside the small chamber. She wore a maid's dress, low cut, of course, and could have been a Lethi, or Vaden, or Bav, depending on which part of her accent she chose to emphasize. Long dark hair worn loose, and a plump, attractive figure made her distinctive in all the right ways. "You're late, Brightness," Lys said. Jasnah gave no reply. She was the employer here, and was not required to give excuses. Instead, she laid something on the table beside Lys, a small envelope sealed with weevil wax. Jasnah set two fingers on it, considering. No, this was too brash. She didn't know if her father realized what she was doing, but even if he hadn't, too much was happening in this palace. She did not want to commit to an assassination until she was more certain. Fortunately, she had prepared a backup plan. She slid a second envelope from the safe pouch inside her sleeve and set it on the table instead. She removed her fingers from it, rounding the table and sitting down. Lys sat back down and made the letter vanish into the bust of her dress. "An odd night, Brightness," the woman said, "to be engaging in treason. I'm hiring you to watch only." "Pardon, Brightness, but one does not commonly hire an assassin to watch only." "You have instructions in the envelope," Jasnah said, "along with initial payment. I chose you because you are expert at extended observations. It is what I want, for now." Lys smiled, but nodded. "Spying on the wife of the heir to the throne? It will be more expensive this way. You sure you don't simply want her dead?" Jasnah drummed her fingers on the table, then realized she was doing it to the beat of the drums above. The music was so unexpectedly complex, precisely like the Parshendi themselves. "Too much is happening," she thought. "I need to be careful. Very subtle." "I accept the cost," Jasnah replied. "In 1 week's time I will arrange for one of my sister-in-law's maids to be released. You will apply for the position using faked credentials I assume you are capable of producing. You will be hired. From there you watch and report. I will tell you if your other services are needed. You move only if I say. Understood?" "You're the one paying," Lys said, a faint Bav dialect showing through. If it showed, it was only because she wished it. Lys was the most skilled assassin Jasnah knew. People called her the Weeper as she gouged out the eyes of the targets she killed. Although she hadn't coined the cognomen, it served her purpose well, since she had secrets to hide. For one thing, nobody knew that the Weeper was a woman. It was said the Weeper gouged the eyes out to proclaim indifference to whether her victims were light-eyed or dark. The truth was that the action hid a second secret. Lys didn't want anyone to know that the way she killed left corpses with burned-out sockets. "Our meeting is done, then," Lys said, standing. Jasnah nodded absently, mind again on her bizarre interaction with the Spren earlier, that glistening skin, colors dancing across a surface the color of tar. She forced her mind away from that moment. She needed to devote her attention to the task at hand. For now, that was Liss. Liss hesitated at the door before leaving.
"Do you know why I like you, Brightness?"
"I suspect that it has something to do with my pockets and their proverbial depth."
Liss smiled. "There's that. Ain't going to deny it. But you're also different from other light eyes. When others hire me, they turn up their noses at the entire process. They're all too eager to use my services, but sneer and wring their hands as if they hate being forced to do something utterly distasteful."
"Assassination is distasteful, Liss. So is cleaning out chamber pots. I can respect the one employed for such jobs without admiring the job itself."
Liss grinned, then cracked the door.
"That new servant of yours outside," Yasna said. "Didn't you say you wanted to show him off for me?"
"Talak," Liss said, glancing at the Vaden man.
"Oh, you mean that other one. No, Brightness, I sold that one to a slaver a few weeks ago."
Liss grimaced.
"Really? I thought you said he was the best servant you'd ever had."
"Too good a servant," Liss said. "Let's leave it at that. Storming creepy, that Shin fellow was."
Liss shivered visibly, then slipped out the door. "Remember our first agreement," Yasna said after her.
"Always there in the back of my mind, Brightness."
Liss closed the door.
Yasna settled in her seat, lacing her fingers in front of her. Their first agreement was that if anyone should come to Liss and offer a contract on a member of Yasna's family, Liss would let Yasna match the offer in exchange for the name of the one who made it. Liss would do it, probably. So would the dozen other assassins Yasna dealt with. A repeat customer was always more valuable than a one-off contract, and it was in the best interests of a woman like Liss to have a friend in the government. Yasna's family was safe from the likes of these, unless she herself employed the assassins, of course. Yasna let out a deep sigh, then rose, trying to shrug off the weight she felt bearing her down.
Wait, did Liss say her old servant was Shin?
It was probably a coincidence. Shin people weren't plentiful in the East, but you did see them on occasion. Still, Liss mentioning a Shin man and Yasna seeing one among the Parshendi, well, there was no harm in checking, even if it meant returning to the feast. Something was off about this night, and not just because of her shadow and the spren. Yasna left the small chamber in the bowels of the palace and strode out into the hallway. She turned her steps upward. Above, the drums cut off abruptly, like an instrument's strings suddenly cut. Was the party ending so early? Dalinar hadn't done something to offend the celebrants, had he? That man and his wine. Well, the Parshendi had ignored his offenses in the past, so they probably would again. In truth, Yasna was happy for her father's sudden focus on a treaty. It meant she would have a chance to study Parshendi traditions and histories at her leisure. Could it be, she wondered, that scholars have been searching in the wrong ruins all these years? Words echoed in the hallway, coming from up ahead.
I'm worried about Ash. You're worried about everything.
Yasna hesitated in the hallway.
She's getting worse, the voice continued. We weren't supposed to get worse. Am I getting worse? I think I feel worse. Shut up. I don't like this. What we've done was wrong. That creature carries my lord's own blade. We shouldn't have let him keep it.
The two passed through the intersection ahead of Yasna. They were ambassadors from the West, including the Azish man with the white birthmark on his cheek. Or was it a scar? The shorter of the two men, he could have been Alethi, cut off when he noticed Yasna. He let out a squeak, then hurried on his way. The Azish man, the one dressed in black and silver, stopped and looked her up and down. He frowned.
Is the feast over already?
Jasna asked down the hallway. Her brother had invited these two to the celebration along with every other ranking foreign dignitary in Kolinar.
Yes, the man said.
His stare made her uncomfortable. She walked forward anyway.
I should check further into these two, she thought.
She'd investigated their backgrounds, of course, and found nothing of note. Had they been talking about a shard blade?
Come on,
the shorter man said, returning and taking the taller man by the arm. He allowed himself to be pulled away. Jasna walked to where the corridors crossed, then watched them go. Where once drums had sounded, screams suddenly rose.
Oh, no!
Jasna turned with alarm, then grabbed her skirt and ran as hard as she could. A dozen different potential disasters raced through her mind. What else could happen on this broken night, when shadows stood up and her father looked upon her with suspicion? Nerves stretched thin, she reached for the steps and started climbing. It took her far too long. She could hear the screams as she climbed and finally emerged into chaos. Dead bodies in one direction, a demolished wall in the other. How? The destruction led toward her father's rooms. The entire palace shook, and a crunch echoed from that direction.
No, no, no!
She passed shard blade cuts on the stone walls as she ran.
Please.
Corpses with burned eyes. Bodies littered the floor like discarded bones at the dinner table.
Not this.
A broken doorway. Her father's quarters. Jasna stopped in the hallway, gasping.
Control yourself, control.
She couldn't. Not now. Frantic, she ran into the quarters, though a shard bearer would kill her with ease. She wasn't thinking straight. She should get someone who could help.
Dalinar?
He'd be drunk.
Sadius, then.
The room looked like it had been hit by a high storm. Furniture in a shambles, splinters everywhere. The balcony doors were broken outward. Someone lurched toward them, a man in her father's shard plate. Tirim, the bodyguard? No, the helm was broken. It was not Tirim, but Gavilar. Someone on the balcony screamed.
Father!
Jasna shouted. Gavilar hesitated as he stepped out onto the balcony, looking back at her. The balcony broke beneath him. Jasna screamed, dashing through the room to the broken balcony, falling to her knees at the edge. Wind tugged locks of her hair loose from her bun as she watched two men fall. Her father, and the Shin man in white from the feast. The Shin man glowed with a white light. He fell onto the wall. He hit it rolling, then came to a stop. He stood up, somehow remaining on the outer palace wall and not falling. It defied reason. He turned, then stalked toward her father. Jasna watched, growing cold, helpless as the assassin stepped down to her father and knelt over him. Tears fell from her chin and the wind caught them.
What was he doing down there?
She couldn't make it out. When the assassin walked away, he left behind her father's corpse, impaled on a length of wood. He was dead. Indeed, his shard blade had appeared beside him, as they all did when their bearers died.
I worked so hard,
Jasna whispered, numb.
Everything I did to protect this family.
How? Liss. Liss had done this.
No.
Jasna wasn't thinking straight. That Shin man. She wouldn't have admitted to owning him in such a case. She'd sold him.
We're sorry for your loss.
Jasna spun, blinking bleary eyes. Three Parshendi, including Clade, stood in the doorway in their distinctive clothing. Neatly stitched cloth wraps for both men and women, sashes at the waist, loose shirts with no sleeves, hanging vests open at the sides, woven in bright colors. They didn't segregate clothing by gender. She thought they did by caste, however, and...
Stop it, she thought at herself.
Stop thinking like a scholar for one storming day.
We take responsibility for his death, said the foremost Parshendi. Gengna was female, though with the Parshendi the gender differences seemed minimal. The clothing hid breasts and hips, neither of which were ever very pronounced. Fortunately, the lack of a beard was a clear indication. All the Parshendi men she'd ever seen had beards, which they wore tied with bits of gemstone and...
Stop it! What did you say?
Yasna demanded, forcing herself to her feet.
Why would it be your fault, Gengna?
Because we hired the assassin, the Parshendi woman said in her heavily accented sing-song voice. We killed your father, Yasna Kolin.
You...
Emotion suddenly ran cold, like a river freezing in the heights. Yasna looked from Gengna to Clade to Varnali, elders all three of them, members of the Parshendi ruling council.
Why?
Yasna whispered. Because it had to be done, Gengna said.
Why? Yasna demanded, stalking forward. He fought for you. He kept the predators at bay. My father wanted peace, you monsters. Why would you betray us now of all times?
Gengna drew her lips to a line. The song of her voice changed. She seemed almost like a mother, explaining something very difficult to a small child.
Because your father was about to do something very dangerous.
Send for Bright Lord Dalinar,
a voice outside in the hall shouted.
Storms! Did my orders get to Elokar? The Crown Prince must be taken to safety.
High Prince Sadeas stumbled into the room along with a team of soldiers. His bulbous, ruddy face was wet with sweat, and he wore Gavilar's clothing, the regal robes of office.
What are the savages doing here? Storms! Protect Princess Yasna. The one who did this, he was in their retinue.
The soldiers moved to surround the Parshendi. Yasna ignored them, turning and stepping back to the broken doorway, hand on the wall, looking down at her father splayed on the rocks below, blade beside him.
There will be war, she whispered, and I will not stand in its way.
This is understood, Gengna said from behind.
The assassin, Yasna said.
He walked on the wall.
Gengna said nothing. In the shattering of her world, Yasna caught hold of this fragment. She had seen something tonight, something that should not have been possible. Did it relate to the strange Spren? Her experience in that place of glass beads and a dark sky? These questions became her lifeline for stability. Sadeas demanded answers from the Parshendi leaders. He received none. When he stepped up beside her and saw the wreckage below, he went barreling off, shouting for his guards and running down below to reach the fallen king. Hours later, it was discovered that the assassination and the surrender of three of the Parshendi leaders had covered the flight of the larger portion of their number. They escaped the city quickly, and the cavalry Dalinar sent after them were destroyed. 100 horses, each nearly priceless, lost along with their riders. The Parshendi leaders said nothing more and gave no clues, even when they were strung up and hanged for their crimes. Yasna ignored all that. Instead, she interrogated the surviving guards on what they had seen. She followed leads about the now famous assassin's nature, prying information from Lys. She got almost nothing. Lys had owned him only a short time, and claimed she hadn't known about his strange powers. Yasna couldn't find the previous owner. Next came the books, a dedicated, frenzied effort to distract her from what she had lost. That night, Yasna had seen the impossible. She would learn what it meant. Part 1. A Light. Shallan, Kaladin, Dalinar.
1. Xanthid. To be perfectly frank, what has happened these last 2 months is upon my head. The death, destruction, loss, and pain are my burden. I should have seen it coming, and I should have stopped it. From the personal journal of Navani Kolin, Ephesus 11:74. Shallan pinched the thin charcoal pencil and drew a series of straight lines radiating from a sphere on the horizon. That sphere wasn't quite the sun, nor was it one of the moons. Clouds outlined in charcoal seemed to stream toward it, and the sea beneath them. A drawing could not convey the bizarre nature of that ocean, made not of water, but of small beads of translucent glass. Shallan shivered, remembering that place. Yasna knew much more of it than she would speak of to her ward, and Shallan wasn't certain how to ask. How did one demand answers after a betrayal such as Shallan's? Only a few days had passed since that event, and Shallan still didn't know exactly how her relationship with Yasna would proceed. The deck rocked as the ship tacked, enormous sails fluttering overhead. Shallan was forced to grab the railing with her clothed, safe hand to steady herself. Captain Tosbeck said that so far the seas hadn't been bad for this part of Long Brow's Strait. However, she might have to go below if the waves and motion got much worse. Shallan exhaled and tried to relax as the ship settled. A chill wind blew, and windspren zipped past on invisible air currents. Every time the sea grew rough, Shallan remembered that day, that alien ocean of glass beads. She looked down again at what she'd drawn. She'd only glimpsed that place, and her sketch was not perfect. She frowned. On her paper, a pattern had risen, like an embossing. What had she done? That pattern was almost as wide as the page, a sequence of complex lines with sharp angles and repeated arrowhead shapes. Was it an effect of drawing that weird place? The place Yasna said was named Shadesmar? Shallan hesitantly moved her free hand to feel the unnatural ridges on the page. The pattern moved, sliding across the page like an axe-hound pup under a bedsheet. Shallan yelped and leapt from her seat, dropping her sketchpad to the deck. The loose pages slumped to the planks, fluttering and then scattering in the wind. Nearby sailors, Thalen men with long white eyebrows they combed back over their ears, scrambled to help, snatching sheets from the air before they could blow overboard.
"You all right, young miss?"
Tosbeck asked, looking over from a conversation with one of his mates. The short, portly Tosbeck wore a wide sash and a coat of gold and red matched by the cap on his head. He wore his eyebrows up and stiffened into a fanned shape above his eyes. "I'm well, Captain," Shallan said. "I was merely spooked." Yalb stepped up to her, proffering the pages.
"Your accoutrements, my lady."
Shallan raised an eyebrow.
"Accoutrements?"
"Sure,"
the young sailor said with a grin.
"I'm practicing my fancy words. They help a fellow obtain reasonable feminine companionship. You know, the kind of young lady who doesn't smell too bad and has at least a few teeth left."
"Lovely," Shallan said, taking the sheets back. "Well, depending on your definition of lovely, at least." She suppressed further quips, suspiciously regarding the stack of pages in her hand. The picture she'd drawn of Shadesmar was on top, no longer bearing the strange embossed ridges.
"What happened?"
Yalb said.
"Did a Kremling crawl out from under you or something?"
As usual, he wore an open-fronted vest and a pair of loose trousers. "It was nothing," Shallan said softly, tucking the pages away into her satchel. Yalb gave her a little salute,
She had no idea why he had taken to doing that, and went back to tying rigging with the other sailors. She soon caught bursts of laughter from the men near him, and when she glanced at him, glory spren danced around his head. They took the shape of little spheres of light. He was apparently very proud of the jape he'd just made. She smiled. It was indeed fortunate that Tosbeck had been delayed in Carbranth. She liked this crew, and was happy that Jasnah had selected them for their voyage. Shallan sat back down on the box that Captain Tosbeck had ordered lashed beside the railing, so she could enjoy the sea as they sailed. She had to be wary of the spray, which wasn't terribly good for her sketches, but so long as the seas weren't rough, the opportunity to watch the waters was worth the trouble. The scout atop the rigging let out a shout. Shallan squinted in the direction he pointed. They were within sight of the distant mainland, sailing parallel to it. In fact, they'd docked at port last night to shelter from the high storm that had blown past. When sailing, you always wanted to be near to port. Venturing into open seas when a high storm could surprise you was suicidal. The smear of darkness to the north was the Frostlands, a largely uninhabited area along the bottom edge of Roshar. Occasionally she caught a glimpse of higher cliffs to the south. Thelena, the great island kingdom, made another barrier there. The straits passed between the two. The lookout had spotted something in the waves just north of the ship, a bobbing shape that at first appeared to be a large log. No, it was much larger than that, and wider. Shallan stood squinting as it drew closer. It turned out to be a domed brown-green shell, about the size of three rowboats lashed together. As they passed by, the shell came up alongside the ship and somehow managed to keep pace, sticking up out of the water perhaps 6 or 8 feet. A xanthid! Shallan leaned out over the rail, looking down as the sailors jabbered excitedly, several joining her in craning out to see the creature. Xanthidin were so reclusive that some of her books claimed they were extinct, and all modern reports of them untrustworthy.
"You are good luck, young miss,"
Yalb said to her with a laugh as he passed by with rope.
"We ain't seen a xanthid in years."
"You still aren't seeing one," Shallan said. "Only the top of its shell." To her disappointment, waters hid anything else, save shadows of something in the depths that might have been long arms extending downward. Stories claimed the beasts would sometimes follow ships for days, waiting out in the sea as the vessel went into port, then following them again once the ship left.
"The shell is all you ever see of one," Yalb said. "Passions! This is a good sign."
Shallan clutched her satchel. She took a memory of the creature down there beside the ship by closing her eyes, fixing the image of it in her head so she could draw it with precision. Draw what, though? She thought. A lump in the water? An idea started to form in her head. She spoke it aloud before she could think better. "Bring me that rope," she said, turning to Yalb.
"Brightness?"
he asked, stopping in place. "Tie a loop in one end," she said, hurriedly setting her satchel on her seat. "I need to get a look at the xanthid. I've never actually put my head under water in the ocean. Will the salt make it difficult to see?"
"Underwater?"
Yalb said, voice squeaking. "You're not tying the rope."
"Because I'm not a storming fool. Captain will have my head if..."
"Get a friend," Shallan said, ignoring him and taking the rope to tie one end into a small loop. "You're going to lower me down over the side, and I'm going to get a glimpse of what's under the shell. Do you realize that nobody has ever produced a drawing of a live xanthid? All the ones that have washed up on beaches were badly decomposed, and since sailors consider hunting the things to be bad luck..."
"It is,"
Yalb said, voice growing more high-pitched.
"Ain't nobody going to kill one?"
Shallan finished the loop and hurried to the side of the ship, her red hair whipping around her face as she leaned out over the rail. The xanthid was still there,
How did it keep up? She could see no fins.
She looked back at Yalb, who held the rope.
Ah, Brightness. Is this payback for what I said about your backside to Besnik? That was just in jest, but you got me good.
He trailed off as she met his eyes.
Storms. You're serious.
I'll not have another opportunity like this. Naladin chased these things for most of her life and never got a good look at one.
This is insanity.
No, this is scholarship. I don't know what kind of view I can get through the water, but I have to try.
Yalb sighed.
We have masks, made from a tortoise shell with glass in hollowed-out holes on the front and bladders along the edges to keep the water out. You can duck your head underwater with one on and see. We use them to check over the hull at dock.
Wonderful.
Of course, I'd have to go to the captain to get permission to take one.
She folded her arms.
Devious of you. We'll get to it. It was unlikely she'd be able to go through with this without the captain finding out anyway.
Yalb grinned.
What happened to you in Carbranth? Your first trip with us, you were so timid, you looked like you'd faint at the mere thought of sailing away from your homeland.
Shallan hesitated, then found herself blushing. This is somewhat foolhardy, isn't it?
Hanging from a moving ship and sticking your head in the water?
Yalb said.
Yeah, kind of a little.
Do you think we could stop the ship? Yalb laughed, but went jogging off to speak with the captain, taking her query as an indication she was still determined to go through with her plan. And she was.
What did happen to me? She wondered.
The answer was simple. She'd lost everything. She'd stolen from Yasna Kolin, one of the most powerful women in the world, and in so doing had not only lost her chance to study as she'd always dreamed, but had also doomed her brothers and her house. She had failed utterly and miserably, and she'd pulled through it. She wasn't unscathed. Her credibility with Yasna had been severely wounded, and she felt that she had all but abandoned her family. But something about the experience of stealing Yasna's soul caster, which had turned out to be a fake anyway, then nearly being killed by a man she'd thought was in love with her. Well, she now had a better idea of how bad things could get. It was as if, once, she had feared the darkness, but now she had stepped into it. She had experienced some of the horrors that awaited her there. Terrible as they were, at least she knew.
You always knew, a voice whispered deep inside of her. You grew up with horrors, Shallan. You just won't let yourself remember them.
What is this?
Tazbek asked as he came up, his wife, Ashlev, at his side. The diminutive woman did not speak much. She dressed in a skirt and blouse of bright yellow, a headscarf covering all of her hair except the two white eyebrows, which she had curled down beside her cheeks.
Young miss, Tazbek said, you want to go swimming? Can't you wait until we get into port? I know of some nice areas where the water is not nearly so cold.
I won't be swimming, Shallan said, blushing further. What would she wear to go swimming with men about? Did people really do that? I need to get a closer look at our companion. She gestured toward the sea creature.
Young miss, you know I can't allow something so dangerous. Even if we stop the ship, what if the beast harmed you?
They're said to be harmless.
They're so rare, can we really know for certain? Besides, there are other animals in these seas that could harm you. Redwaters hunt this area for certain, and we might be in shallow enough water for Kornax to be a worry.
Tazbek shook his head.
I'm sorry. I just cannot allow it.
Shallan bit her lip and found her heart beating traitorously. She wanted to push harder, but that decisive look in his eyes made her wilt.
Very well.
Tazbek smiled broadly.
I'll take you to see some shells in the port at Amidlaten when we stop there, young miss. They have quite a collection.
She didn't know where that was, but from the jumble of consonants squished together, she assumed it would be on the Thalen side. Most cities were this far south. Though Thalena was nearly as frigid as the Frostlands, people seemed to enjoy living there. Of course, Thalens were all a little off. How else to describe Yalb and the others wearing no shirts despite the chill in the air? They weren't the ones contemplating a dip in the ocean, Shallan reminded herself. She looked over the side of the ship again, watching waves break against the shell of the gentle Santhid. What was it? A great shelled beast? Like the fearsome chasm fiends of the Shattered Plains? Was it more like a fish under there or more like a tortoise? The Santhidin were so rare, and the occasions when scholars had seen them in person so infrequent, that the theories all contradicted one another. She sighed and opened her satchel, then set to organizing her papers, most of which were practice sketches of the sailors in various poses as they worked to maneuver the massive sails overhead, tacking against the wind. Her father would never have allowed her to spend a day sitting and watching a bunch of shirtless dark eyes. How much her life had changed in such a short time. She was working on a sketch of the Santhid's shell when Yasna stepped up onto the deck. Like Shallan, Yasna wore the hava, a Vorin dress of distinctive design. The hemline was down at her feet and the neckline almost at her chin. Some of the Thalens, when they thought she wasn't listening, referred to the clothing as prudish. Shallan disagreed. The hava wasn't prudish, but elegant. Indeed, the silk hugged the body, particularly through the bust, and the way the sailors gawked at Yasna indicated they didn't find the garment unflattering. Yasna was pretty. Lush of figure, tan of skin, immaculate eyebrows, lips painted a deep red, hair up in a fine braid. Though Yasna was twice Shallan's age, her mature beauty was something to be admired, even envied. Why did the woman have to be so perfect? Yasna ignored the eyes of the sailors. It wasn't that she didn't notice men. Yasna noticed everything and everyone. She simply didn't seem to care one way or another how men perceived her. No, that's not true, Shallan thought as Yasna walked over. She wouldn't take the time to do her hair or put on makeup if she didn't care how she was perceived. In that, Yasna was an enigma. On one hand, she seemed to be a scholar concerned only with her research. On the other hand, she cultivated the poise and dignity of a king's daughter, and at times used it like a bludgeon. "And here you are," Yasna said, walking to Shallan. A spray of water from the side of the ship chose that moment to fly up and sprinkle her. She frowned at the drops of water beading on her silk clothing, then looked back to Shallan and raised her eyebrow. "The ship, you may have noticed, has two very fine cabins that I hired out for us at no small expense." "Yes, but they're inside, as rooms usually are. I've spent most of my life inside." "So you will spend much more of it, if you wish to be a scholar." Shallan bit her lip, waiting for the order to go below. Curiously, it did not come. Yasna gestured for Captain Tosbeck to approach, and he did so, groveling his way over with cap in hand.
"Yes, Brightness?" he asked.
"I should like another of these." "Seats," Yasna said, regarding Shallan's box. Tosbeck quickly had one of his men lash a second box in place. As she waited for the seat to be ready, Yasna waved for Shallan to hand over her sketches. Yasna inspected the drawing of the Santhid, then looked over the side of the ship. No wonder the sailors were making such a fuss.
"Luck, Brightness," one of the sailors said.
It is a good omen for your trip, don't you think?
I shall take any fortune provided me, Nunhel Eltorv, she said. Thank you for the seat.
The sailor bowed awkwardly before retreating.
You think they're superstitious fools,
Shallan said softly, watching the sailor leave.
From what I have observed, Yasna said, these sailors are men who have found a purpose in life and now take simple pleasure in it.
Yasna looked at the next drawing.
Many people make far less out of life. Captain Tosbeck runs a good crew. You were wise in bringing him to my attention.
Shallan smiled.
You didn't answer my question.
You didn't ask a question, Yasna said. These sketches are characteristically skillful, Shallan.
But weren't you supposed to be reading?
I had trouble concentrating.
So you came up on deck, Yasna said, to sketch pictures of young men working without their shirts on. You expected this to help your concentration?
Shallan blushed as Yasna stopped at one sheet of paper in the stack. Shallan sat patiently. She'd been well trained in that by her father, until Yasna turned it toward her. The picture of Shadesmar, of course.
You have respected my command not to peer into this realm again? Yasna asked.
Yes, Brightness. That picture was drawn from a memory of my first lapse.
Yasna lowered the page. Shallan thought she saw a hint of something in the woman's expression. Was Yasna wondering if she could trust Shallan's word?
I assume this is what is bothering you?
Yasna asked.
Yes, Brightness.
I suppose I should explain it to you then.
Really? You would do that?
You needn't sound so surprised.
It seems like powerful information, Shallan said. The way you forbade me, I assumed that knowledge of this place was secret, or at least not to be trusted to one of my age.
Yasna sniffed.
I found that refusing to explain secrets to young people makes them more prone to get themselves into trouble, not less. Your experimentation proves that you've already stumbled face first into all of this, as I once did myself, I'll have you know. I know through painful experience how dangerous Shadesmar can be. If I leave you in ignorance, I'll be to blame if you get yourself killed there.
So you'd have explained about it, if I'd asked earlier in our trip?
Probably not, Yasna admitted. I had to see how willing you were to obey me, this time.
Shallan wilted and suppressed the urge to point out that back when she'd been a studious and obedient ward, Yasna hadn't divulged nearly as many secrets as she did now.
So, what is it, that place?
It's not truly a location, Yasna said.
Not as we usually think of them.
Shadesmar is here all around us right now. All things exist there in some form, as all things exist here.
Shallan frowned.
I don't...
Yasna held up a finger to quiet her.
All things have three components. The soul, the body, and the mind. That place you saw, Shadesmar, is what we call the cognitive realm, the place of the mind. All around us you see the physical world. You can touch it, see it, hear it. This is how your physical body experiences the world. Well, Shadesmar is the way that your cognitive self, your unconscious self, experiences the world. Through your hidden senses touching that realm, you make intuitive leaps in logic and you form hopes. It is likely through those extra senses that you, Shallan, create art.
Water splashed on the bow of the ship as it crossed a swell. Shallan wiped a drop of salty water from her cheek, trying to think through what Yasna had just said.
That made almost no sense whatsoever to me, Brightness.
I should hope that it didn't, Yasna said. I've spent 6 years researching Shadesmar, and I still barely know what to make of it.
I shall have to accompany you there several times before you can understand even a little the true significance of the place." Yasna grimaced at the thought. Shallan was always surprised to see visible emotion from her. Emotion was something relatable, something human, and Shallan's mental image of Yasna Kolin was of someone almost divine. It was, upon reflection, an odd way to regard a determined atheist. "Listen to me," Yasna said. "My own words betray my ignorance. I told you that Shadesmar wasn't a place, and yet I call it one in my next breath. I speak of visiting it, though it is all around us. We simply don't have the proper terminology to discuss it. Let me try another tactic." Yasna stood up, and Shallan hastened to follow. They walked along the ship's rail, feeling the deck sway beneath their feet. Sailors made way for Yasna with quick bows. They regarded her with as much reverence as they would a king. How did she do it? How could she control her surroundings without seeming to do anything at all? "Look down into the waters," Yasna said as they reached the bow. "What do you see?" Shallan stopped beside the rail and stared down at the blue waters, foaming as they were broken by the ship's prow. Here at the bow, she could see a deepness to the swells, an unfathomable expanse that extended not just outward, but downward. "I see eternity," Shallan said. "Spoken like an artist," Yasna said. "This ship sails across depths we cannot know. Beneath these waves is a bustling, frantic, unseen world." Yasna leaned forward, gripping the rail with one hand unclothed and the other veiled within the safe-hand sleeve. She looked outward, not at the depths, and not at the land distantly peeking over both the northern and southern horizons. She looked toward the east, toward the storms. "There is an entire world, Shallan," Yasna said, "of which our minds skim but the surface. A world of deep, profound thought. A world created by deep, profound thoughts. When you see Shadesmar, you enter those depths. It is an alien place to us in some ways, but at the same time we formed it, with some help." "We did what? What are Spren?" Yasna asked. The question caught Shallan off guard, but by now she was accustomed to challenging questions from Yasna. She took time to think and consider her answer. "Nobody knows what Spren are," Shallan said. "Though many philosophers have different opinions on..." "No," Yasna said. "What are they?" Shallan looked up at a pair of wind sprens spinning through the air above. They looked like tiny ribbons of light, glowing softly, dancing around one another. "They're living ideas." Yasna spun on her. "What?" Shallan said, jumping. "Am I wrong?" "No," Yasna said. "You're right." The woman narrowed her eyes. "By my best guess, Spren are elements of the cognitive realm that have leaked into the physical world. They're concepts that have gained a fragment of sentience, perhaps because of human intervention. Think of a man who gets angry often. Think of how his friends and family might start referring to that anger as a beast, as a thing that possesses him, as something external to him. Humans personify. We speak of the wind as if it has a will of its own. Spren are those ideas, the ideas of collective human experience, somehow come alive. Shadesmar is where that first happens, and it is their place. Though we created it, they shaped it. They live there, they rule there, within their own cities."
"Cities?"
"Yes," Yasna said, looking back out over the ocean. She seemed troubled. "Spren are wild in their variety. Some are as clever as humans and create cities. Others are like fish and simply swim in the currents." Shallan nodded. Though in truth she was having trouble grasping any of this, she didn't want Jasnah to stop talking. This was the sort of knowledge that Shallan needed, the kind of thing she craved. Does this have to do with what you discovered? About the Parshmen? The Void Bringers?
I haven't been able to determine that yet. The Spren are not always forthcoming. In some cases, they do not know. In others, they do not trust me because of our ancient betrayal.
Shallan frowned, looking to her teacher.
Betrayal? They tell me of it, Jasnah said. But they won't say what it was. We broke an oath, and in so doing offended them greatly. I think some of them may have died, though how a concept can die I do not know.
Jasnah turned to Shallan with a solemn expression.
I realize this is overwhelming. You will have to learn this, all of it, if you are to help me. Are you still willing? Do I have a choice?
A smile tugged at the edges of Jasnah's lips.
I doubt it. You soul cast on your own, without the aid of a Fabriel. You are like me.
Shallan stared out across the waters.
Like Jasnah? What did it mean? What?
She froze, blinking. For a moment she thought she'd seen the same pattern as before, the one that had made the ridges on her sheet of paper. This time it had been in the water, impossibly formed on the surface of a wave.
Brightness, she said, resting her fingers on Jasnah's arm. I thought I saw something in the water just now. A pattern of sharp lines like a maze.
Show me where.
It was on one of the waves, and we've passed it now. But I think I saw it earlier on one of my pages. Does it mean something?
Most certainly.
I must admit, Shallan, I find the coincidence of our meeting to be startling. Suspiciously so.
Brightness?
They were involved, Jasnah said. They brought you to me. And they are still watching you, it appears. So no, Shallan, you no longer have a